Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Roto-World Football Show. I am Patrick Daugherty, joined Tuesday, March 19th by Denny Carter and Kyle Dvorchik. A lot has gone down since last we left you on Thursday. Most of it went down last Thursday and Friday. We haven't had a chance to talk about it yet on the show. That includes Justin Fields arriving in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania as the backup, supposedly, to Russell Wilson in a trade literally everyone on planet Earth hates. Most of all, Russell Wilson. I mean, I guess Justin Fields haters love it. See, he's just a fantasy guy all along, but you didn't know that.
Fantasy and bio.
I feel like the whole football world has gotten like really in their own head about Justin Fields. Like the fantasy players convince themselves he's better than he is. Like real football guys have convinced themselves he's worse than he is. Like we give a lot of dual threat quarterbacks. Like we don't hold them to like the same passing standard as Dan Marino because that's not what makes them special. But
yeah,
like, Justin Fields is like, oh.
he's not Mahomes.
Yeah, that's, and yet he's not Patrick Mahomes. But you didn't think about that. Like me, I kind of did. But we'll get to Justin Fields arriving in Pittsburgh. Marquise Brown defaulting into number one receiver duties in Kansas City and debating if Marquise Brown is actually good. The most surprising move, probably a free agency so far, not necessarily that Keenan Allen was let go by the Chargers, but that he was aggressively acquired by the Chicago Bears for the low, low price of a fourth round pick, you know, because of his lightly used hamstrings. I'm sure that was part of the trade compensation there. Curtis Samuel to the Bills offense, kind of an exciting one. Hey, we're back in on Curtis Samuel. Bet you didn't think that was possible.
I did. I thought it was possible.
The fantasy community back on Kurt Sam, as he's known. Jerry Jeudy to the Browns. It's going to be a little harder to get back in on Jerry Jeudy, I feel like, than Curtis Samuel. Alexander Mattison to the Raiders. Rico Dowdle back in Dallas. KJ Osborne in New England. Wow. Yikes. Okay. We're getting kind of Drew Lock. We're getting kind of the bottom of the barrel here. Kenny Pickett to the Eagles.
You can tell we got to the bottom of the barrel because I have like a ton of notes, a lot of which don't even get used on the podcast. I'm like, this fits the flow of the conversation, whatever.
Yeah.
The bottom half of your questions, I didn't put notes for. I'm not doing Kenny Pickett notes.
my note, I did have some mental notes on Drew Lock, who had what may have been like top 10 most humiliating introductory press conferences in NFL history, where the team seemed to have told Drew Lock that he needs to say again and again that he will never be the starter of the team. And
well,
is the starter.
You think it's humiliating for Drew Lock? Because I feel like it's more humiliating for Daniel Jones. Like just come on, man, just go out there and say it. Like it's fine. Because I think he immediately. I've come up with a new metric that we've batted around a lot on the show, and Denny knows I love to hammer home my articles. Like for the backup quarterback has to adhere to Daniel Jones's law, which that means the backup, there has to be no chance that they're better than the starter. And I would say Drew Lock catastrophically fails this.
He does. He's probably instantly better.
Exactly. So he's the latest instantly better number two quarterback on the Giants. Like man, like this, I know it's like hard. I know you're a competitor, Drew. Just go out, just say you're not the starter.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not here to take anyone's job. You're not here to easily be better than Daniel Jones, even if you don't practice or learn the game plan. Just say that you're the back. No, fine. I get it. I'm happy with this opportunity. I get it. I'm the backup, y'all.
Well, because the Seahawks GM, John Schneider, said, hey, we couldn't keep him because the Giants said he could compete for the starting job. And then the next day he had to come out and say, in no way am I ever going to be the starter here. They made him wear a T-shirt that said Daniel Jones is the starting quarterback of the Giants. I thought that was over the top.
So it's creating a lot of questions already answered by his shirt. And we'll answer a few more questions about that later in the show. One thing we didn't have on the agenda that Kyle pointed out was the Vikings' transparent effort to acquire more draft trade-up ammunition when they was the number 23 overall pick from the Texans, Kyle. And it is funny, part of NFL logic, like, why is this pick worth more than what they traded to get this pick? But they know that that's just how GMs say, well, it's a first rounder. We have no choice but to treat this as more valuable than the picks they traded to get this pick. But you think it's a transparent effort to gather ammunition to trade up for a first round quarterback. Do you not, Kyle?
Yeah, I'm glad you made the point that, like, in a how's one team just acquiring more value, which, like, we can roughly determine the value of draft picks. And then the team that lost value is like, now we're ready to continue moving up the board. But like, it is true. That is 100% how GMs think. Like, to move my assumption is, you know, they acquired, I believe, pick 23 in exchange for pick 42. Basically, they move up 20 picks from the second to the first round in exchange for a future second. The obvious, like, my belief, I say it's almost one, like, it's almost guaranteed that the idea with this pick is that it will entice another GM who's picking at probably 3, 4, 5 to move back to 11, which is the pick that the Vikings actually, you know, their own pick. Seems like a very transparent bid to move up and get JJ McCarthy. I think the more interesting question, because it feels like almost settled science that that's what this is where do they end up moving to? Like, do they give a king's ransom to the Patriots? And is it a move for Drake May, which has been speculated? I think it's not very likely. Do they give that king's ransom to the Cardinals, who are then out of the Marvin Harrison sweepstakes, but they probably get like a future first out of it on top of the first they're already getting? We saw how profitable just taking these like high variance future first can be for the Bears. Literally are picking first because of not their own pick, but because they got a future first from a Carolina team that struck.
Because Bryce Young didn't grow 2 more inches in high school.
Oof. No. Those good analytics from the Bears, though. Oh, the Bears analytics. It's just like the like JPEG cylinder analytics, but it worked this time. It
did work this time.
It worked really well, actually.
It didn't crush it.
Kyle, I think the target almost has to be number 5 with the Chargers, because it seems like, reading the tea leaves, the Cardinals are pretty psyched about getting Marvin Harrison Jr. It seems like each of the top 3 teams already have their eye on their future franchise quarterback. Maybe the Patriots aren't actually sold on Jaden Daniels or JJ McCarthy and will be willing to move down. The top 4 picks seem reasonably set, though. The Chargers, meanwhile, are in salary cap hell. They're getting rid of veterans and team leaders. Although they somehow kept Joey Bosa. I still don't understand why they kept Joey Bosa.
Well, I think he just like straight up took a pay cut. Like,
he did, but still.
He got guarantees in exchange for slightly less money, if I remember correctly.
He could have got even larger cap savings, though, if they had just cut him loose. They seem like they're maybe embarking on a mini rebuild. Like, they are going to want to accumulate more picks. The Chargers seem like the place you want to be if you're trying to get J.J. McCarthy. But well, I guess we don't truly know what the Patriots are doing at 3. We don't truly know that the Cardinals are taking. The Cardinals have been pretty bad. I feel like about hiding like the Marvin Harrison. Like, there's no one in Cardinals media was even pretending it won't be Marvin Harrison, which is usually a pretty good sign because they all know people inside the organization. And if anyone was even like, yeah, I don't know, there's a 20% chance we don't, they would be reporting that. Like, no one's reporting that. It just
seems like I agree with that. I think the only way that they don't sit and take Marv there, I guess there's 2 ways. Technically, one is that it's like 3 first round picks. It's 11, 23, and the future first. And that gives, I mean, that's a king's ransom for moving back in a good receiver class where you're not getting Marv anymore, but you're still getting a good receiver. That would entice me as a GM, but it requires a lot of like long-term thinking, which we know NFL teams don't love to do.
Don't do it.
Or two, a slight quirk
that's
is
woke.
That, yeah, it would be way too woke for NFL teams to think 1 year into the future. A slight wrinkle is that I think the Chargers could still trade from 5 to 11, and then Minnesota would then go from 5 to 4 to secure no one jumping them, which would just be a funny little wrinkle that I think wouldn't make a difference in terms of, like, I don't think anyone's jumping the Vikings, but I was talking to a former colleague, Pat Corain. Imagine on the off chance that that does happen. They move to 5 and then the Raiders jump them all of a sudden to 4. They like call the Raiders, or they call the Cardinals bluff. They're like, no one's trading up with you, and someone does it. Imagine going back to your owner and you're like, you know how I said we'd save the franchise? We had mortgaged our future to get our quarterback of the future. That's really what we messed it up. I'm so sorry. Like, GM fired instantly and never gets another job. So I think they probably have to move 5, then 4 again.
Man, some of us are also trying to talk to former colleague Pat Corain, by the way, but having trouble scheduling it.
It is trouble.
Talk about that more off air. Our listening and viewing audience might not possibly believe that we would have more, could have more to say about Justin Fields, but he has been traded. So we have to say more about Justin Fields. As we mentioned in the opening, he's now a Pittsburgh Steeler. He's now supposedly the number 2 quarterback on the Pittsburgh Steelers, Denny. First off, do we really believe that? You have published an article on the matter. What did the findings say? I've been out of town over the weekend, so I hadn't thought a whole lot about how this would unfold. You mentioned, of course, there's going to be like a major Justin Fields package where you could basically be like Taysom Hill in the red zone and like just Russell Wilson in even more hell than usual. And just do we think it's truly set in stone that Russ is the week one starter? And just how do you see the situation unfolding? Like, with the break?
Well, yeah, I mean, the reports were that Mike Tomlin called Russell Wilson just before the trade was made for Fields and said, "You're the starter." I think I do put some weight on that because
I put weight on that Mike Tomlin believes that right now before there's been a single rep taken.
Right, yeah, right. Yeah. I'm not saying that Russ can't possibly lose this job. Of course he can. But I do think that he fits the Arthur Smith system, whatever that is, to a T. Like he, you know, compares very favorably to 2019 Ryan Tannehill in many ways. I think that he can do exactly what Tannehill did in that hyper efficient 2019-2020 Titans offense. And in that offense, folks, I forgot, you know, obviously other folks probably forgot too. There was a small but existing Marcus Mariota package. Some called it the pity package because Mariota had lost his job, lost his starting job to Tannehill. So late in the season, he would come in for a snap here or there, usually in or around the red zone, usually to hand off to Derrick Henry. But a mobile guy like Mariota compares somewhat to Justin Fields, although Justin Fields obviously a better rusher in every possible way. I detailed that in the piece.
Every conceivable metric, conventional, advanced or otherwise, Justin Fields is a better
rusher. I mean, tackle breaking, elusiveness, speed,
everything. Dog levels, actually wanting to play football.
That is one key that Mariota has lacked, is wanting to be out on the field. And I do think good luck to the Commanders, who obviously have to start him for 90 games this year. I don't believe Arthur Smith doesn't know how to command an offense, doesn't know how to get the ball to his best players. Well, I mean, his time as offensive coordinator in Tennessee suggests otherwise. Like he fed Derrick Henry, he fed AJ Brown in his rookie season. It was a very narrow touch tree in that offense. Okay. Now as head coach, things went sideways. Okay.
I mean, that was kind of the case with the Falcons though. Like how many yards did their third receiver have? He's 10. Not on an NFL team these days. Actually, it's Van Jefferson and he's literally on the Steelers, but he was like 1.1.
Talk about a great sign.
I know. But like their third receiver didn't exist. Their second receiver hardly existed. They tried to get it to Drake London and Kyle Pitts. It was just hard. Like it was hard to earn catches from bad quarterback play, and it was the volume itself was low because they ran 40 times a game, but like he knew who the good pass catchers were. He just had dumb methods of trying to get it to them.
So I still blame Arthur Smith for all that, by the way, because I guarantee he told the front office, it doesn't matter who's a quarterback, I can get them the ball. And turns out big wrong.
Yes. Yeah, obviously. And I think that, you know, maybe hopefully he learned a lesson, but even if he didn't learn a lesson, I think that you can look back to his OC days in Tennessee and say, he knows, you know, how to get the ball into good players' hands. I know that sounds crazy, but it's only partially true. As head coach, I think he went down a dark rabbit hole as head coach. I think the rabbit hole was, I got to trigger the analytics guys. I got to trigger fantasy managers. I have to show that I'm better and smarter than all of them.
I don't even think that's a bit, and I don't think you do either. That does happen. Like the ego.
He literally got chippy with reporters about the Bijan Robinson reporting, saying like, you guys don't know what you're doing. And they literally got an investigation into it like 2 weeks later.
So I'm hoping, and I'm thinking that Arthur Smith is chastened by that experience, a completely catastrophic final season in Atlanta. I don't believe that Justin Fields' talent in this Steelers offense will just kind of linger on the sideline, languish on the sideline. Okay. I don't think he's going to put on the hat and sit down and look at the iPad, the Microsoft Surface, whatever it is. And talk to Russ when he comes off the field. I believe this will be something of a rotation. I think that he will be like a supercharged Taysom Hill, who has more throwing ability, who is way, way faster, obviously, than Taysom Hill. And, you know, by the way, last year, as recently as last year, Arthur Smith's offense was 16% under its expected pass rate in the red zone. Only the Bears were more run heavy. So I just detailed the many, many reasons why, you know, kind of dot connecting why I believe Justin Fields will have some role if he doesn't just plain take over at some point for Wilson.
It's such a strange situation because I feel like if you're running a 17-game simulation right now, most of them would turn out better with Russell Wilson than Justin Fields. But I also think if you're going on the any given Sunday principle, and like you need to win one game, as you guys have talked about, like introduce some variance into the game, give yourself higher end outcomes. There's no doubt Justin Fields is the better option.
Yes, yes.
And that with Russ, it's all about parking the bus, just trying to get through the season, trying to go 10-7 and make the playoffs. Like hope something weird happens. Because this is just a very unstable, this is going to be a very unhealthy dynamic. I get why they did it because it made them much better on paper. I feel like this was not a smart move by the Steelers.
I think it was very smart. I really
it's always
do.
So toxic, yeah. Like to get into like narrative and psychology, it's so toxic.
Right.
When the team doesn't even know who the quarterback really should be, the fans, of course, the media, it's going to be like a circus. And I just feel like it's like, it's this like the classic unstable environment that never pays off.
So I can't speak for like the locker room stuff. I often, that's kind of a blind spot for me is I'm like, hey, if it works on paper, it works. What are you going to do? So I do get what you're saying. And I'm not discounting that. I will say that getting Justin Fields for basically nothing and Russell Wilson for basically nothing is a pretty good move over Mason Rudolph and Kenny Pickett as your two quarterbacks.
Not a bit. Are we entirely positive Russell Wilson is better than Mason Rudolph?
Wow.
Yes, we are. But like, I'm not laughing off the podcast. I get the question.
Wait, Mason Rudolph had a better 3-game stretch at the end of last season than Russ did all year. He was going to get exposed if it had gone any longer, but almost without question, Mason Rudolph had the best 3-game stretch of either of those.
He players. Had his metrics were disturbingly good.
You've already didn't he in the offseason have settled on Jake Browning and Mason Rudolph as the two best quarterbacks in the NFL last season.
Jake Browning is way better, but Mason Rudolph was weirdly good, I will say.
Yeah. What are the odds Russ starts all 17 games? Feels
zero point zero.
Yeah. No,
feels very chance. Slim. I think Wilson is almost guaranteed to be the week one starter. I'd put it at like 90% plus. The whole reason they traded Kenny Pickett for literally nothing was that he dared to question the idea of not getting some first team reps in like OTAs. And they're immediately like, buddy, you're out of here. I think he probably asked for the trade as well. So I think that sort of tips the cap of like, they are planning all signs point to Russ being the guy in week one. As we all agree, like, the moment he has a 3-game stretch, like a lot of 3-game stretches he had last year, the media is calling for, and the coach is probably calling for a change.
I mean, I he could avoid that sort of stretch by saved. He could be saved by the rotation. Okay. Like he could.
The rotation exacerbates the problem.
No, rotating. Cause he could do what he needs to do. Manage. Okay. Like the occasional play action deep shot. And Fields comes in on third and short, on fourth and short, near inside the 10 or inside the 20. And him and Jaylen Warren and Najee Harris, that's a hell of a trio. I think that they'll establish the hell out of the run in where it counts. And teams will not really know what to do.
Think about all the back-breaking interceptions Arthur Smith called for Desmond Ridder. Those are all having subbed in Justin Fields. Hey, Justin, it's fourth quarter, third and 11 in the red zone. We need you to throw a back-breaking interception. Justin Fields subs in for those plays. Denny, I think as you mentioned, Russell Wilson's playing between the 20s. None of the back-breaking interceptions are happening in there. Justin Fields comes in for the high leverage and would get Russell Wilson bench plays.
Which means that neither of them have any fantasy value.
Correct, 100%.
No, zero fantasy value. But Denny, you talk about Russell Wilson being a good fit for the Arthur Smith system. I think Fields, someone who needs his passing like stage managed, basically. Like, how could I feel like this is the best possible fit where it's as choreographed and managed and manipulated as possible? He's only throwing in what are in theory like truly advantageous situations. This is gonna be a really high powered rushing attack, I think, with the Steelers. That's the one thing where you can't take away from Arthur Smith until he got so in his own head last year that he didn't use his best running back. he's always. I mean, he had one of the only positive EPA run games in the entire league in 2022. Yep, with Tyler Algier.
I mean, Arthur Smith is the guy, you know, before he was a punchline, in 2019 and 2020, he ran the most efficient and most successful red zone offense in the history of the NFL.
Wow. So I think Fields is honestly a better fit for the offense. I don't even know what Russell Wilson does for you anymore. He doesn't even do the moon ball well anymore. That's purely the eye test.
It's pretty good.
He had some moon balls.
He had a few. Sean Payton basically lived in fear of ever calling.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I mean, Sean Payton, I've heard some film knowers say that they are, like, actually, like, appalled at the game plan and the reads that they set up for Russell Wilson late in the season. It was basically, like, what you give a rookie in his first OTA. And they didn't trust him at all.
Well, because he's that bad, though. It's the third grade coach, basically, Payton, couldn't figure anything out.
Sean Payton was not in ever.
And no, he was not. But you could argue there's a reason for that, though.
You could, I guess. I
don't know. He's the second straight, like, Hall of Fame NFL coach. Pete Carroll and Sean Payton were just, like, totally out.
Please. You're making good. I don't like your points right now.
I really don't. If they were going to trade for Justin Fields, I really don't understand why Russell Wilson is on the roster. They should have just re-signed Mason Rudolph and acquired Justin Fields.
Yep. I think maybe the sort of upside here is that, like, you're paying Russell Wilson like $1.5 million. You're paying him as if he's a punt gunner. So you know that you are not committed beyond a year. If you end up starting Justin Fields for 6 games and he looks good, we know how the NFL feels about Fields. It will not be costly to re-sign Justin Fields if you think there's a little bit of a spark there. You get him 6 games at the end of the season. He seems to have cleaned up the sack issue. He's more accurate. And you're like, oh, this guy gives us a chance going forward. It wouldn't be hard to bring him back because we know the NFL, no one wants him. I don't think 6 games is going to change a ton about his open market value, or they could probably just franchise tag him too. So, like, there's some sort of long-term upside. But I agree, Pat. Just, like, take your lame duck season with Russell Wilson and draft a quarterback next year. That's the most logical thing to do, and they maybe are skirting that a bit.
Yeah, it needed to be either all in on Russ or all in on Fields. I feel like this is like splitting the baby in a way that everyone is going to be miserable, including the players. You know, every Monday, I'm going to see George Pickens be like, man, I don't know who should the quarterback should be. Like, stop asking me. Like, I have no clue.
I don't know who to yell at in the second quarter. Exactly. I've been thinking about it all day.
Well, Mike Tomlin just said, next question.
Yep.
Every Monday. No, I hear. I think a team with a weaker infrastructure would absolutely crumble in this situation.
Tomlin's going to handle it. Strong of an infrastructure. Tomlin seems like he's slowly. He's been jokerized, man.
I think Tomlin's
getting garbage teams to the playoffs, or at least 500 plus seasons.
I feel like he's becoming a little more the Joker every year, and he might want an organizational shift. He might want a new team at some point in the near future.
I don't think they would have done this without some sign off on him. Supposedly he really likes Justin Fields too. Like, that was something that was reported when Fields was in the draft and was reported last year for the trade rumors this year again. Supposedly really likes Fields. So I would imagine, given his tenure with the team, I think he had a good hand in this.
I feel like he might be nearing his Andy Reid with the Eagles moment, where he's an elite head coach that just kind of needs like act two.
That would be
shocking. I mean, I could see him getting to a Mike Vrabel place too. We're like, dude, Vrabel's going to be head coach in a year or two, but it just slowly petered out with the Titans. And Tomlin will get there. Most coaches get there.
I got to say, I think these tough guy coaches have run their course. And
Tomlin, though, a player's coach, I think.
He's not Vrabel. But I mean, look, Vrabel didn't get a sniff.
No, he didn't really get. He got interviews.
But
not, he was not a finalist anywhere.
It wasn't. Yeah, he wasn't top of the list as far as I could tell from. But he did get interviewed.
Mike Vrabel should stop giving off "I'm going to kill you in the elevator" energy. Is what he should.
I think that would help. But I do think that the era of the tough guy coach is absolutely over.
Only for now. Everything's cyclical. It'll be back.
Not everything. No, people say about the run game. Oh, the run game will come. It will never come back.
It already is coming back.
It's not coming back.
It already did last year.
It's still as bad as ever.
It was better last year than it had been.
One team, the 49ers. No, everybody else was terrible.
Anyway, real quick, let's just talk about Kenny Pickett. Man. Anything at all in the numbers that say this guy might
have won? Oh, no.
Yikes.
No.
The number which he was drafted, which I don't even remember, was it like 16 or something? That's pretty high.
No, it was like 22.
Oh, that's not as high as I thought.
It was the one year where the entire NFL media apparatus was like, yeah, there's no first round quarterbacks. Like, everyone was like, you should not draft a first round quarterback no matter what you do. Even though the Steelers were like the Cardinals and Marvin Harrison, basically from January, was like, yeah, we're going to take anybody.
Steelers are that type of org. You know what they're going to do very quickly.
They basically announced that they're drafting Najee Harris like 3 months before they did. you know.
I was shocked they didn't get Joey Porter with whatever pick they had in like the early 20s. Yeah. Joey Porter Jr., obviously, in the early 20s, but they got him anyways.
They did. And yeah, I mean, the analytics of drafting a quarterback because he plays in the home city, I think that was misguided.
They've got to stop telegraphing these picks. About. By the way, Steelers desperately need to draft a wide receiver. Like, probably not in the first round.
Yep.
Call Kevin Colbert out of retirement. Have him make one more amazing mid-round wide receiver pick. That's what the Pittsburgh Steelers need to do. What we need to do is take a short break and return after this. We are closing in on opening day, but it's never too late to squeeze in another draft. So for those cramming before the regular season begins, grab your Roto-World Baseball Draft Guide. It's loaded with comprehensive positional rankings, projections, and player profiles to ensure your draft is a home run. Visit NBCSports.com/draftguide and use promo code BASEBALL24 to get 10% off at checkout. Yeah, I just stopped saying success.
Good.
I subbed in home run instead. Good. Denny, when do you think the Major League Baseball season begins?
It begins. It begins March 30th.
Kyle, when do you think it begins?
I know, because I think it's insane. Isn't it literally like 14 hours from now?
It's an 18 hours game from in now.
Korea, yeah. I believe.
South Korea.
Oh,
South
wait Korea. A second. Wait. That's a. I thought that was an
exhibition. So did I. No,
it's not exhibition. No, you don't go all the way to Asia to play spring training games.
Wait a second.
Yeah, it's got to be real.
Wait.
The MLB. I'm not kidding. Literally, folks. Literally.
I'm
not serious.
Okay. For my first question are these games on Peacock?
They're on ESPN. I hate doing
it. Okay. Them. Then what in the world is that? Are you kidding me? The season opener?
Denny, here's the deal. Asia is a huge baseball market. It's a huge and growing baseball market. You can't really send the teams there during the middle of the season because the travel involved. People don't want to go over there for a fake game. Fans don't want to turn out for a fake game. Ergo, you're playing two real games 8 days before the regular season actually begins on March 28th. And I'm not sure when MLB Sunday leadoff on Peacock begins, but I know it's in April.
I'm struggling with this one, folks. I don't really understand. This is the punishment that Americans get for not having their kids play baseball anymore.
Wait, tangentially related. So Pat's making me do as you.
I was actually going to answer your question before you even asked it.
These games don't count, right?
We're not going to do retroactive stats for these.
But that means if I drafted any Padres and whatever team they face, I just miss out on two games.
Get ready to learn screwed, buddy.
What? They don't count towards.
I can maybe apply retroactive stats. Actually, we'll look into that.
Like when I think it's main event drafts or whatever. They draft after the Thursday opener. So Jabroni gets three touchdowns and he's a third round pick and never does anything again. It's like that. I got to know we play with relievers too. So some reliever gets a save and strikes out five dudes. I have to draft him.
Yeah. Shohei Ohtani goes 2-for-4, two home runs on March 20th. You're up bleep creek, Kyle. Unless I play retroactive stacks, which I have dictatorial powers as commissioner, I'll think about.
I don't think I have it's Dodgers and Padres.
Dodgers, Padres.
I don't think I have many of those players, so I'd prefer if you I do. I have Freddie Freeman.
You're screwed. So what were you gonna say, Denny?
Nothing. We can move on.
Let's move on to the football, which is Marquise Brown arriving in Kansas City, Missouri as the new wide receiver one. First off, is Marquise Brown actually good? Second off, is he going to break out? Third off, we were talking before the show with Kyle. So Kyle, we'll throw to you first to Marquise Brown. You know, the perception is still Marquise Brown is like the deep guy. The reality has been he's never really been the deep guy. The teams are increasingly using him not as the deep guy. So would we caution people to be wary of like he's a one-for-one replacement for Marquez Valdes-Scantling takes? Just unload your takes on Marquise Brown to Kansas City.
Well, I thought it was funny that you said the new wide receiver won in Kansas City and immediately said, is he even good? To which the second question answers the first statement, which is like, he's not the team's wide receiver.
Yeah. I was going to say that's inadvertent Rashee Rice erasure. Oh, I love Rashee Rice. He's such a weird player with the enormous underneathness of his game. But yes. Thank you for making that immediate correction, Kyle.
So I think you pointed out something really interesting. Cause he totally has beat you 30 yards downfield as consistently as you can do that type of speed. But as you pointed out, he's not really been used like that in the sense of he probably just has a more complete route tree than someone like MBS, who just has one specific function. I do think Marquise Brown can fill that function for this team, but I think it's much more obviously, like arguably a 2-for-1 replacement, in which Marquise Brown probably does get a chunk of those clear out routes. Those like, this one's a sprint, buddy. You are just out there to move a safety around for a Rashee Rice 5-8 target. But I think he gets some of those routes and plenty of routes that are more traditionally designed for a receiver who has a complete or at least more complete than MBS skill set. He's a career 8 out of 12, which is like right around what Deontay Johnson was last year. Like that's nothing like MBS, which is a career 8 out of just shy of 17. I believe he was over 18 last year. So yeah, they're not the same player. He has the speed to accomplish some of the things MBS does, but he's going to do a lot more for this team. I'm still like, you mentioned it's Rashee Rice erasure. I'm still taking Rashee Rice.
Me too.
Well ahead of him.
To be clear, I am actually taking Rashee Rice well ahead of Marquise Brown.
But yeah, it's a good spot for Marquise Brown, who, like I said, I think he's just a more complete. We know I'm not the biggest Marquise Brown stan. He's a more complete player than the MBS, and I assume the Chiefs know that.
Denny, is Marquise Brown good? He played with Lamar Jackson, didn't really do a whole lot. Played with Kyler Murray, didn't really do a whole lot.
Played with Clayton Tune. Played with Josh Dobbs.
That's true. So, astronaut.
Right. We do need to remember that he played with Kyler Murray, who has been over the past 2 years one of the worst downfield throwers in the league. Okay. Whether that makes sense, considering his pedigree, I don't know. But he has not been good, and that has hurt everybody in that Arizona offense, including Marquise Brown. Here's what I wrote about Marquise Brown entering this offense, this Chiefs offense in something of a role that was filled by MVS and Justin Watson last year. So talking about Watson and MVS, their inefficiency was the stuff of legend. Only two wideouts had a worse air yards conversion rate than MVS. Watson was in the bottom 20, but here's the thing, guys. Marquise Brown was sandwiched between those two. Oof. So in air yards conversion rate, really awful. And in 2022, spectacularly bad at converting air yards. He, like I mentioned, half jokingly, he's really good at drawing, you know, pass interference calls. Maybe that's the thinking here on the Chiefs. It's just, we're just going to get a bunch of pass interference yards from this guy. But he has not been a good downfield target ever in the NFL. So I'm a little, yes, he's an upgrade. How much of an upgrade over MBS? I'm not sure.
He is an upgrade over MVS. He won't be drafted ahead of Rashee Rice in fantasy, though.
Oh, no.
Can he get in? Let's go aggressive. Can Marquise Brown be a top 30 wide receiver? So not even a clear wide receiver two. Will he be in the wide receiver 2-3 mix, one of our classic hedges?
I think if the Chiefs target tree is somewhat narrow, I think possibly I would say no. If I had to choose, I'd say no.
Agreed.
I bet the Chiefs are going to use another day two pick on a receiver, by the way.
They should. Brown's on a one-year $7 million deal. That makes him, on a per-year basis, not including the fact that it's 1 year, less average money than Zay Jones, than Curtis Samuel, than Robert Woods, who are all like wide receiver threes on their own team, especially if you're counting like tight ends as a possible receiver. Like, their money and short-term dedication to him suggests they view him as like a wide receiver three level player. He probably, I don't want to say took a pay cut, but took a deal with the Chiefs quite quickly, because a year with Patrick Mahomes can really boost your long-term value if it goes well. But the fact that he didn't get that right away suggests we know roughly how the NFL feels about him. Pat, to your point, I'd love for the Chiefs to recognize that, and in a deep receiver class, still take a shot, even if it's just in the third round.
I think they're kind of going to be in that mode the Packers used to be, where they're always picking at the end of the first round. They have an elite quarterback. It's harder for them to get an elite wide receiver because of their draft capital and their salary cap realities with such a highly paid player, Patrick Mahomes, where they just need to every year basically use a day two pick
on potential
Devontae Adams type, which is what the Packers did that for years. They've kept taking day two flyers and receivers. The Chiefs have done it 2 years in a row. It worked one time, and Rashee Rice did not work in Sky Moore.
I do think real quick, I think that KC is probably going to just commit to this check down offense that they have, because
I
check my notes. They've won two straight Super Bowls doing exactly that.
They have, but they know that you're living kind of dangerously when you do that. It's a low margin for error approach. every one of their games in the playoffs, except for the Dolphins, who didn't bother to get off the bus, basically came down to the final possession. What happened in the AFC Championship game? Did that come down to the final? I don't even remember.
It was close. That was the low scoring
of the Ravens. Who are they playing in the divisional round? The Bills? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they were all very close, tense games. And they know that in the repertoire they have to not do that. And I think they will return to not doing that when they don't have to do the station to station.
So I think it's tough, though, with the way like defenses play them, forces them to do this. Mm-hmm. And that's what I mean. Among Patrick Mahomes, so many talents.
When it's MVS and Justin Watson, it's
a agreed. Denny made that point last year that like part of why they didn't target MVS a lot is because he's Marcus Valdes-Scantling. But I do think like part of it is the fact that it worked, letting those guys clear out and having an extreme yak producer in Rashee Rice and a guy who like just turns every play into an easily made layup in Patrick Mahomes. Like, he's got a cannon, can hit any deep pass, but also never taking sacks, never throwing interceptions, and being incredibly accurate on the short to intermediate throws. Like, you could just be the team that forces layups and makes them at the highest clip in the league, and that also works. They just have so many ways to win because of how good Pat is.
I'm not really concerned about them sticking with this approach. They scored under 400 points last year. Like, that shouldn't be possible, Patrick Mahomes. Like, they're not going to want to do that again. And when they can open it back up, they will. And maybe it is more like a mutant version of what the Patriots matriculate down the field, but it'll still be with Patrick Mahomes. And I think we have already seen the nadir of the explosiveness of this Chiefs offense.
I mean, I hope so. Like, obviously, Pat, we need to. Like, as much as it worked last year, it worked in the rings category. It didn't work in the how much I enjoyed it category.
I mean, Patrick Mahomes, especially now he's got three rings, he's not here to check down.
I mean, I don't know. I think that he's fine with it.
That's the thing. He's going to be fine with it when he needs to be. But it's not going to be like 60 minutes of check down football. It was just a personnel reality last year.
Pat, I don't know, man. I feel like this is the reality of Burrow and Allen and Mahomes.
Burrow and Allen, though, get to take deep shots at a far greater intervals than Patrick Mahomes do. That's what I'm saying. I think it's basically become like the updated version of the Patriots, where it's going to be mostly matriculating the ball down the field, but with the explosive element still being there. The explosive element just straight up was.
I guess we'll see if they want to change. I do think that largely they've replaced the run game with the check down game. And that's good because it's way more efficient.
They have, but the deep ball will be coming back to the Chiefs offense.
I do think one thing is like
completely confident.
Yeah, I don't know. Like last year, when they were desperate for a guy who could actually earn the deep ball, they took like Yak Machine Rashee Rice. This year, like I said, Marquise Brown has the speed to be that clear out guy, but like, as Denny pointed out, Pat, as you pointed out, like he's not really a deep ball receiver. He is a fast receiver who could quickly get down the field, but he's not been a deep ball specialist. Like their actions, we still have the draft to go, of course. Actions seemingly also maybe indicate that they're just fine with like Marquise Brown as a speed underneath guy. Rashee Rice was, of course, always going to be a more underneath player. So we'll see.
They took the shots somewhat often last year. And it's not just a narrative that they were quite frequently dropped. Not just MVS either.
Oh yeah,
Justin Watson had a few of those. Tony had several of those.
Tony had two drops that were passes that were intercepted.
Those weren't really deep balls, I don't think. But yeah,
one of them wasn't. I can't remember both of them.
I'm not worried. Patrick Mahomes is never going to voluntarily like park the car. He's just not going to do that. It was a reality last year, and I will bet my home on it. And now I see the bank examiner in my yard again.
I mean, one day they'll hit on a deep receiver. Like, I think they will still make efforts to have a deep guy. And one day that guy will be good and we'll get it back. It's just a matter of when. Like, if they don't have a receiver on their board they like this year, they'll be fine with that. They're not going to reach on someone who's like a lesser talented but deep player. But I do think at one point they will stumble into a good deep player and Patrick Mahomes' eight out will go up and they'll have more explosive plays. You're right about that.
We needed Rashid Shaheed to the Chiefs.
We did, except for it was never even remotely possible.
No, I know, I know.
It's like how we need Justin Herbert traded, even though like it just cap-wise could not happen mathematically. Doesn't mean we don't need it. It would be funny.
We still need a fifth-round pick traded for Darius Slayton to the Chiefs. Then
we're I'm in on that, too.
You know who's not a deep receiver is Keenan Allen. He is now a Chicago Bears receiver. The ultimate slot machine, the ultimate. So the Bears, to their credit, I'm going to say almost overlearned the lessons of past rookie quarterbacks. So they're doing everything they can to surround Caleb Williams with as much talent as possible for when he hits the ground running in 2024. They've made sure this is not going to be an undermanned skill core, an undermanned 53-man roster. At least that's what they hope. At least that's what I hope. Is this receiver core big enough for the two of Keenan Allen and DJ Moore? Caleb Williams, for one, definitely feels like attempts are a quarterback stat. I feel like no matter what they attempt to do, like even if they enter the season like truly intending to be balanced,
yeah,
just ain't going to happen. Caleb Williams will not be reading all that. And it's going to be high volume offense. But does this kneecap DJ Moore, Denny, do we need to be worried about DJ Moore, a true alpha last year?
Yeah, right. I mean, air yards domination, importantly, obviously target share as well. That, you know, gets gashed here with Keenan Allen. I think of Keenan Allen now as like, you remember a long time ago, how we were all out, at least I was, on Reggie Wayne when Andrew Luck came into town and in place of Peyton Manning.
I do not remember that.
He dropped in drafts. Oh, he's old, new quarterback. Keenan Allen is a target machine. So what I'm saying is he's going to continue to absorb targets. I could see this Bears offense being kind of pass heavy.
It's not gonna be kind of, it will be extremely pass heavy.
That'd be cool. I would like that. So DJ Moore, yeah, okay. I think that you're going to sacrifice air yards domination and target domination, but maybe for more efficient, better passing. Because you know, Fields was all over the place last year. Like his bad throw rate was bottom five out of like 35 qualifying quarterbacks. Caleb Williams will be better as a passer, I believe. So that should kind of smooth out whatever, you know, this should smooth out the production for more, even if he loses those air yards and targets.
Will both Keenan Allen and DJ Moore be top 24 fantasy wide receivers?
For sure.
It is a rookie quarterback.
I agree. It's not the perfect setup for fielding two top 24 receivers, but I mean, we'll see about the draft. I still think they're very much in play for a first round ninth overall receiver, probably Romo Odunze, but we'll see about that. I still think it's a less than likely outcome, less than 50-50. If that doesn't happen, they're thrown to two players on the entire roster, and that's the end of it. Because those
hold
two
on,
players
that is straight up Cole Kmet erasure. I'm not even saying this is a bit.
Oh no, Cole Kmet. Oh no.
He's good enough where it's not gonna be a two-man show. I'll say that. Where it's like he'll maintain, what was his target share last year? He can maintain a 15% target share, Cole Kmet.
Easily. Nah,
I mean, I feel easily. Like he's a non-entity now.
I feel like he's like Tyler.
Everyone has always felt like that, even though it's never true.
It's because he's had to compete with like Tyler Scott and Valus.
There is
Jones
Cole Kmet derangement syndrome in the fantasy football community,
and you have it.
Well, hold on. How many yards do you think Cole Kmet had last year?
I already looked it up. Doesn't matter.
It's going to be something ridiculous, like 2,000. he had 500, 600.
No, 719.
Again,
like top five amongst tight ends. There's no way he's just going to not be part of the offense. He's also making like $1 trillion. He's also only 25.
He blocks well, man.
He does a lot more than blocks well, folks.
Somebody has a lot of Cole Kmet on their dynasty.
No, I'm just saying I actually have zero Cole Kmet shares.
Really?
Every year I have tons of redraft shares because everyone lets him fall and he's a value and I'm in ninth place. I'm just saying, don't forget about Cole Kmet. Don't forget about folks. What are we talking about?
I don't know, man.
They're not going to draft a receiver, by the way, at nine. That will, the Bears are going to, they're like going to be half measures. Like, well, we took care of the weapons thing. Now it's back to defense.
I had them not going receiver at nine with Rome on the table in my last mock draft, and Twitter didn't like that. They thought if he's on the table, you got to take him, which like is probably what I would do. But like I had him going another high value position in edge. I think like you said, they will see themselves as set. I'd probably just take the stud receiver, but I think they will see themselves as set enough to not take a receiver at nine.
Or take Caleb at one and then Brett Bowers. At nine. Ugh. And destroy.
Yeah, it's very bad.
Brock Bowers, we've all agreed off air, man. Like this ain't happening.
No, I think I'm gonna be in on him. I think I'll be in on him.
This ain't happening, man. It's not happening.
Too small.
We'll get into this so. But the Bears, though, yeah, they have a defensive minded head coach. Like they traded for like the name brand wide receiver. They're like, what more do you want us to do? come on, man. Like, you serious? Like, we're not taking a receiver. Oh, you're right.
They're gonna they're gonna take a defensive
player. By the way, what's going on? Matt Eberflus has swag now.
He like, looks great.
You know, he looks he went like extreme makeover.
He got a haircut. It's a good looking haircut. He grew a little facial hair.
Are you talking about the one where he was sitting courtside?
Yeah, he's swagged out now.
He was good looking there.
I mean, he looked like straight out of like 1962 NFL coach casting.
I did not know.
He went to one NBA game.
I had to say,
has swag.
I was unfamiliar with your game.
Like, literally went to an NBA game once and got swag.
And became the coolest coach in America.
It's like, oh, wow, this is how you get swag. This is how you get Curtis Samuel on your team. The Bills desperately needed more weapons. Curtis Samuel is so weird because he's always in like that in-between zone of receiver and gadget player. Kyle, again, this Bills team had to have more places where they could deliver the ball. Like, Josh Allen, talking about playing more point guard style football last year. He did not have enough places to distribute the ball. They just didn't have good enough weapons. We can debate how good Curtis Samuel actually is, but he's an upgrade over, you know, Isaiah McKenzie, Cole Beasley before him, a true actual weapon. But does it really matter for fantasy? Like, are we going to be starting Curtis Samuel in redraft fantasy in 2024, Kyle?
At some point, we will be starting Curtis Samuel in redraft fantasy, but I guess they gave him like pretty good money. I think it was like 3 years, $8 million.
3 years, 24, which comes out to $8 million, folks.
Look at that, buddy. Wouldn't you believe it? I do think so. The weird thing is, he's in theory would be an upgrade on Isaiah McKenzie, Cole Beasley, like these, like, you know, Trent Sherfield, the just a guys they were throwing out as their third receiver. But he's not a like outside flanker Z type receiver. He's exclusively in the slot early in his career when he was, you know, maybe the gadgety guy. That wasn't true. But the past 2 years, he's been 70% slot rate with the Commanders. Three of the past 4 years, he's been 70% slot rate. So he's probably coming in most likely to just one for one replace Khalil Shakir, because that's Khalil Shakir's role in the team last year. So I think this strangely still leaves them in need of another pass catching weapon, because they still don't have one, the Gabe Davis replacement, but really they needed a Gabe Davis upgrade. So they are still looking for that type of player with Gabe signed away in Jacksonville. I do think, however, Curtis Samuel is probably an upgrade over Khalil Shakir.
I just realized what happened. This is not a bit. You know who they're going to sign to replace Gabe Davis, don't you?
I don't even know anyone's left.
They're going to commit to this as a cardio role, and they're going to be signing MVS to get back on the treadmill in Buffalo.
I thought you were going to say Mike Williams, because I think someone brought that up last show. No, you're right. They might just commit to the cardio role.
Mike Williams is visiting the Jets, Panthers, and Steelers. Not as of yet scheduled to hit up the New York-Canada border, Denny. I mean, Curtis Samuel, he's one of the all-time, like, almost there fantasy players, and he used to be one of the guys where we would look at the podcast agenda and everyone would be like, how the hell are we talking about Curtis Samuel again? And then You start crying before the show goes to air, like, Denny, we're about on air.
You're going to have to
up. Like, listen, I can see you cry. I see you cry before every show, but the people can't see this.
That's true.
Curtis Samuel, is he going to be a thing in 2024?
Yeah, I really do think that the deterioration of the Buffalo defense will mean that they have to just keep their foot on the gas this in 2024 and just let Josh cook. And that should be good for everybody in that offense. And if Curtis Samuel is a full-time player, which he should be, I think he could be scammy. I know that.
Does he have a full-time player skill set? I guess.
Well, I know that in his history, he does have some downfield, some downfield usage on his resume, but as of last year, he had almost none. So 8 of his 93 targets came 20 yards down the field last year. 8. He had, 60 of those 93 targets came either behind the line of scrimmage or within 9 yards of the line of scrimmage. He's a PPR scam type, and that could be really good in this offense. I don't know if they're going to say, hey, you got to get back to your Carolina days when you were blazing downfield. I don't know if he's that sort of player anymore. I mean, that was a long time ago.
Well, people are making a big thing already of he's reuniting with Joe Brady, where he had his career year in 2020, the only season his entire NFL career where he had more than 656 yards receiving. He had 851. Also had 41 rush attempts with Joe Brady as Panthers offensive coordinator in 2020. So this can be like a narrative, but yeah, I'm not going to really be buying into it either. I don't know. Is that what we settled on? I wasn't really paying attention.
Kyle, were you going to make a point about his downfield stuff? Or
no, I had a similar point, though, about just his, like, is he the complete package? He's just a player who has traditionally throughout his career come off the field when the team moves out of three wide because there's typically a second tight end coming in, taking that, like, one takes the slot spot. So, I think they could still do a lot with him. But, yeah, he's far from the complete package as a player.
And just, yeah, top 36. I feel like we can never go back to that, those dark days. We can never.
That point you made about this is going to be a dumb narrative, it made sense to me. I kind of liked it.
I mean, it's not, you can't be totally ignored. I'll say that, but it's going to be totally overblown.
You said 41 rush attempts, and even though like 41 rush attempts isn't going to change the bottom line of fantasy all that much, I love a gadget player, so I was kind of into it.
So I'm trying to think of any difference whatsoever between the Buffalo Bills and the 2020 Carolina Panthers and maybe having Josh Allen as quarterback. And who was the Panthers starting quarterback in 2020?
My guess, ironically, it might have been an Allen. I'm going to guess Kyle Allen.
No, it was not. I don't know if I have any memory of this. This is
The return of the corpse of Cam Newton?
I knew he was in New England that year. 15-game 2020 Carolina Panthers starter was Teddy Bridgewater.
I don't remember a single snap of that, I'll be honest.
It's like, what? This has been like real, like fifth year Madden Dynasty and bio type thing here. Like, wow.
This is very Mandela effect-y, because I don't remember, honestly, a snap of this.
No,
I remember writing about it.
His QB win-loss record, which is definitely a thing, was 4-11. Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah, I mean, Teddy, he seems like a really swell guy. But when people say, well, why couldn't he succeed in the Dolphins offense, or whatever? I mean, come on.
It's because he got injured the second he stepped on the field.
He's, too small.
So we can never go back with Curtis Samuel. Can we go back with Jerry Jeudy, who got a little more frustrating with each passing year in Denver, acquired by the Cleveland Browns for some unknown reason, given a 3-year extension that includes $41 million fully guaranteed at signing. Seems totally unnecessary by the Cleveland Browns, Kyle or Denny. First, who wants to take this? I saw Kyle nod first. Yeah, I'll give it to Kyle. Is Jerry Jeudy going to be a top 36 receiver in the Cleveland Browns, who already have Amari Cooper, who already have two lost years of Deshaun Watson at quarterback, was not very great when he was on the field, in between like unique different shoulder injuries last year. Just what in the world do we make of Jerry Jeudy to the Cleveland Browns?
Yeah, to answer top 30, probably not. Or
top 36.
36. I'm going to guess
AKA no. Wide receiver 3.
Yeah, if I had to take a guess, I would say no. And it's honestly not even an indictment of Jeudy. I actually had a little bit of pro Jeudy propaganda coming into this. But man, 3 years, $41 million, and upwards of 58, I think, is the up to, probably through incentives or something of that nature. Like you said, did they need to do this? Like
I said, like what was exactly compelling them to do this?
Yeah, like do they really anticipate he goes for 1,300 yards this year and he commands a greater contract in 12 months? Like, I certainly don't. I guess maybe that's why they traded for him, but good for him. And I had some propaganda that I was going to come with in 2021 and 2022. I was a believer that we're maybe on the precipice of a breakout. Despite playing for terrible teams both those years, he was top 12 in yards per route run, top 12 in ESPN's open score in both those years. And I was of the belief that, like, oh, you bring Sean Payton in, who can, like, run an NFL team, unlike Nathaniel Hackett the year prior. Russell Wilson maybe turns things around, and we'll get some good results. And, like, we didn't get terrible results. He wasn't dreadful last year. Frankly, he was almost identical to Cortland Sutton. He was, like, 0.01 yards per route run different. He had, I think, 5 fewer catches, 19 fewer yards, but 8 fewer touchdowns. And that's a skill. Like, Cortland Sutton was winning jump balls in the end zone and scoring nice touchdowns, and Jerry Jeudy wasn't doing that. But that accounts for 8 plays of the NFL season, most of the rest of which their stats were very similar. It wasn't terrible. And we know this is a coaching staff who is entirely out on the concept of the team's quarterback. I think there's a
chance. And on Jerry Jeudy, Sean Payton, basically before the season, I don't like this Jeudy guy.
Mm-hmm. They've been out on him for like 2 years. I know. So So I think there's a chance because he was an extremely gifted college player, extremely gifted, like incredible that he put up like, it's like a 1300-yard season with like three first round picks on his roster at Alabama or whatever. And he had flashes of really good seasons in 21 and 22. That is to say that even with all of my optimism, I don't have a ton of faith that Deshaun Watson bounces back to being like a top 12 NFL quarterback. Maybe they can push him into top 20. Dude, he looks cooked, man.
And he can't stop getting hurt. I mean, that's like the telltale. He missed a year and he came back. And as so often happens, I can't stay on the field all of a sudden. Yeah. Bizarre.
The one good game people point to was he like routed the Titans, who had one of the worst defenses, especially a terrible secondary last year. I know we talked about why did the Titans sign Calvin Ridley? It's because their corners got cooked every single snap against Calvin Ridley two games in the year. Yeah, Deshaun Watson beat up that team. Most of the rest of his very limited 2023 was a lot of the same from the previous year. So I think Jerry Jeudy could bounce back, but from a fantasy perspective, it ultimately may not matter.
Danny, are you going to care about Jerry Jeudy in 2024?
No, because he can't overcome David Njoku and Amari Cooper. And unless one or both of those guys misses extended time, Judy's not going to be a thing. I mean, I was going to make some of the points that Kyle made about he had the same profile as Courtland Sutton basically last year, except for he didn't ever score any touchdowns. Even his target per route run was right in line, 18%, which is kind of abysmal. But Sutton's was only 19%. So, you know, very, very similar thing. He doesn't score touchdowns. No real leap. In fact, a lot of regression last year. I was excited too. Yeah,
there's a reason I cited the 2021 and 2022 stats. Those were, even though they weren't counting stat years for him, they were the good efficiency years. Last year wasn't that year.
His last six games, 2022, were like magnificent, like in every way, and it didn't work out. So no, I mean, it's not going to happen here. He's going to be overdrafted. I'm pretty convinced of all that.
I don't know if he can be overdrafted. I feel like people have been so scarred by him.
There's still Jeudy weirdos out there.
There are a lot of those. There are a lot of Jerry Jeudy.
I mean, because if a guy is that good in college, and he really was that good, then there are people who will hold out hope, even 20 years into his NFL career.
He is only 25.
So oh, my goodness.
He's pretty young. He's 5 years younger than Amari Cooper. The Browns, I just don't know about Deshaun Watson, man. Failed the eye test spectacularly. I mean, injury, I think they claim he had two unique injuries to his throwing shoulder.
Yeah.
That can't be good.
Is anybody wondering why the Browns keep signing backup quarterbacks?
Yeah.
Is that a question that we're pondering?
No. They're running out of patience. They're 100% running out of patience.
I mean, to do the NBA reporter thing, what is going on? Because every time I turn around, they're signing another, not a third stringer, not a practice squad guy, a legit backup. Tyler Huntley most recently.
Didn't they sign two quarterbacks?
Yes.
Yeah. Who was it? It was Tyler. I'm forgetting who they gave like $8 or $9 million.
Jameis.
Oh, yeah. JMO. They have three pro bowlers.
First off, don't. Jameis has no claim to JMO.
Sorry. Even though Jameson Williams also would have no claim to JMO. Is there another JMO I'm missing?
No. Jameson Williams is JMO. Man.
But like, where does the Mo come? He's.
I don't know.
The point is that there's something.
Why do these shows keep going an hour and 45 minutes?
There's something going on, and I think eventually, and it might not be anything like.
How could they trust him? How could they trust him at this point?
I mean, it's going to go down. It's on track to go down as the worst transaction in the history of the NFL.
Yeah, it's on track for sure. Not even kidding. Maybe the worst transaction in the history of North American sports.
I was trying to hold back a little bit, but yes.
Because not just the price they paid to acquire him, the fact that the NFL, the one major sport where every contract is like nine trap doors, they handed out the one contract with literally zero trap doors.
For an extremely risky player. Like, you want to give Patrick Mahomes that guaranteed for the entirety of the contract. And even if he like shreds his knee and his career is over, you're like, that's fine process. You give the best player ever what he wants. John hadn't played football in so long.
Not to mention, it was an extremely bad moral decision.
Yes. Also, yes. Producer Adam asked Russell Wilson, experiment was able to be ended after two seasons. That's the big difference between that and Deshaun. Like, They're very.
If Deshaun had a normal contract, he would have already been cut by now, I think.
I literally saw that exact same thing happen with Russell Wilson. We like are seeing it. We already saw it happen. And they're able to move on. They can take their steps forward. They're eating their lumps in dead cap, but like they can begin the rebuilding process. The Browns just can't even begin the rebuilding process yet. So anyway, Jerry Jeudy in his second college season, 1,300 yards, 14 touchdowns with Jalen Waddle, Henry Ruggs, Irv Smith, Devonta Smith on that team.
Never heard of him. So
we talked about Irv Smith in the last show. You had to have heard of him.
That's true. I have heard of Irv Smith. I guess we should end the show. We're not going to talk about all this other stuff. Madison, I mean, who cares? I mean, yeah, sure. He's on the Raiders. Yeah, he's on the Raiders. Cool. Yeah.
But also, the Zamir White stuff is getting out of hand.
Oh, yeah. Zamir White, classic team ruining pick. I mean, just going to ruin every single team he's on.
Stop. Let's not pretend that this guy's going to be a starter.
I know. This year's Alexander Madison.
Please, yeah,
please.
Yeah. I mean, like, come on, we're way too old for this.
I know. Denny and I are just really are. We've seen every year that year's version of Alexander Madison or Zamir White.
Yeah, Zamir White. Tank, he's their only running back right now. Well, guess what? In like a month and a half, he won't be, and then it's over.
I know. Even if they don't add anybody, they'll add someone by week four. And it'll be.
Yeah, I think it was like Ty Chandler who we felt the same way about, like. Ty Chandler was good last year, and I was like, we've seen it. We know what they're – and they ultimately did add a player who's really good in Aaron Jones. It's like you do just get a sixth sense for how these things happen. It's just like our pattern-seeking brains. They're like – they're good at finding the patterns.
Well, it's just running backs. If they don't command the touches as a rookie, that's an enormous red flag. And then if they get the touches in like their second or third year and then don't like force their way onto the field for good, that's always the biggest red flag. And how could Zamir White force his way onto the field with Josh Jacobs, I guess, is a fair question. But just as the case with Alexander Madison and Dalvin Cook, if he had been good, he would have gotten more than 200 touches or whatever during the course of his entire rookie contract. And it's the same thing's happening, going to happen with Zamir White. And Zamir White has won every single league my enemies drafted him in.
Hey, look, for the right price, I'll totally be in on drafting Zamir White. Because I think, like, Alexander Madison was less than just a guy last year. He was like a backup-ish caliber player. But like we could have known a week ago that Zamir White was not going to enter the season with the backfield he has. It'll still be a win if he enters it with this version.
Oh, I was going to say, you actually could. I was about to make fun of people for making this point, but in good faith, you could make the point that it's actually good for Zamir White that they added Alexander Madison.
I had that point already queued up because if they did not sign Alexander Madison, they're more likely to draft a running back in the NFL draft, and that running back is probably better than Alexander Madison. If this even slightly decreases the chances they draft a second round or third round running back, that is a net win because I think Zamir White's best shot of getting a bunch of carries is trying to steal them from, or really having Alexander Madison try and steal them from him, because Madison's probably not as good as a third round pick.
And I'm back in on Zamir White.
Let's do it. Zamir White was good last year. He's good.
And we're not talking about Rico Dowdle or KJ Osborne today. Sorry if you.
I thought it was crazy you had Rico Dowdle on the show sheet. That was nuts.
Yeah, I don't know.
Speaking of backfields, it's not going to look like this in a month and a week or whatever. You can chalk that one up as it's not going to look like that. So
not so fast.
Denny, is there anything you had to get off your chest before you end the show?
No, there's nothing currently on my chest anymore.
All right, good. I got a little ragged today. We had some big names to talk about. Free agency is the first fun phase of free agency is officially over, though.
Yes, it is.
We had some good names on this one. We just missed Marquise Brown on last show, so it helped us give us a good bit for here.
We did. So really good stuff from Kyle, really good stuff from Denny. Check out Denny's article on Russell Wilson and Justin Fields, because there's stuff in the article we didn't even get to, even though we talked about it for like 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Well worth checking out. It's going to be one of the most fascinating / frustrating / overplayed storylines of the entire summer, but we will have it covered from every angle. We'll have every transaction covered from every angle, the stuff that does trickle in this week. So keep it locked to rotoworld.com. For Kyle, for Denny, I'm Pat. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back later.